whether it is a border between two countries or two people, borders inspire fear and breed separation. A heart without borders opens up to the possibility of change. A change of heart is a revolutionary act. And right here, we are engaged in revolutionary work to make changes, to experience and encourage transformation at all levels. Our revolution is love unconditional. Our call is to become revolutionary in the way we practice radical hospitality. We move from I to we and develop a communal identity. We move from a scarcity mentality to one of abundance and gratitude. You might remember a book from the 1980s written by Rigoberta Menchú. She's from Guatemala, human rights activist. She tells of the persecution suffered by her family and humble indigenous peasants at the hands of the paramilitaries. She tells of entire villages being burned, the people brutally killed, including her father, her brothers. In El Salvador, we heard about Archbishop Oscar Romero, a Catholic priest who, after witnessing numerous violations of human rights, began to speak out on behalf of the poor and the victims of repression. In 1980, after speaking out against U.S. military support for the government of El Salvador and calling for soldiers to disobey orders to fire on innocent civilians, Archbishop Romero was shot dead while celebrating Mass in the small chapel of the cancer hospital where he lived. It is believed that those who organized his assassination were members of Salvadoran death squads, including two graduates of the School of the Americas. Before he was shot, he was in the middle of saying the following: I'd like to make an appeal in a special way to the men in the army. Brothers, each one of you is one of us. We are the same people. The farmers and peasants that you kill are your own brothers and sisters. When you hear the words of a man telling you to kill, think instead in the words of God, "Thou shalt not kill." No soldier is obliged to obey an order contrary to this law. In his name, and in the name of our tormented people who have suffered so much and whose laments cry out to heaven, I implore you, I beg you, I order you, stop the repression. Romero has become a symbol of resistance, of the church taking up the cause of the people who cry out for justice. Romero's plea to stop the repression against the most vulnerable ones still resonates and inspires us today. Romero's death in a church while he was conducting Mass highlights the moral imperative calling us, people of faith, to make our churches a sanctuary for the afflicted, for the persecuted. Last week, I learned from Star King member Evelyn Cormier that this congregation is no stranger to granting sanctuary. In the 1980s, the sanctuary movement in the U.S. emerged as a result of the massacres being carried out in El Salvador and Guatemala. U.S. citizens were outraged at U.S. intervention and military training supporting the massacres and human rights violations. The Unitarian Universalist Association strongly supported the sanctuary movement. Three General Assemblies of the UUA endorsed sanctuary for refugees in 1980, 1984, 1985, and in 1986, a board resolution established a UUA sanctuary fund to support individuals seeking sanctuary and aid to churches providing sanctuary. The sanctuary movement was born as an act of solidarity with people seeking asylum. It was a matter of life and death. Many of those who were able to escape that horror arrived here in the U.S., seeking refuge. Very few of them were granted political asylum. Many were denied, leaving them vulnerable to being deported, to being sent back to the very place where they had witnessed their parents, children, and siblings being killed. Churches were asked to open their doors and physically house people in danger of being deported. And when this church was asked, "Which side are you on?" this church, Star King, said, "We are on the side of love. We are on the side of people seeking sanctuary." When this church was asked if they would protect immigrant people, if they would harbor immigrant people, this church said yes. This church remained a sanctuary for almost 8 years. This is proud history. This is inspirational history. This is who we are, and this is who we vow to continue to be. Welcoming, compassionate, courageous. Some history is worth repeating itself, right? Some is not. This one is. We are once again being asked, which side are you on? Will you harbor the persecuted? Will you open your hearts and your doors to protect someone in danger? In the coming weeks, we will begin a series of congregational conversations and community forums offering us the opportunity to learn more about the meaning of sanctuary and the different levels of sanctuary that we might consider supporting. It is important for us to realize that sanctuary is a moral action. There are no laws barring the immigration officials from entering the church to arrest the person being protected. Historically, churches have been respected, and immigration officers have not crossed that unspoken line. But after the election, after hearing the anti-immigrant rhetoric and the hateful words especially directed against Mexican people, we are right to fear what is to come and to prepare. So, people, we need to get ready. We need to get ready to take action. Because if not now, then when? It is a matter of life and death. We need to once again become a sanctuary where no human being is labeled illegal. We need to develop strong community partnerships and become allies and support their efforts. Our denomination has been on the side of immigrants since its merger in 1961. This is a proud history. We have a history of solidarity with immigrants, and this church has been on the side of love for almost 40 years. Let's make it another 40 plus. In 2012, we gathered in Phoenix, Arizona at our General Assembly, and there we witnessed the deplorable conditions of the tent jails of the infamous Sheriff Arpaio. That General Assembly marked a new era. A new sanctuary movement emerging to respond to policies criminalizing people for being undocumented, separating families, and violating basic human rights and due process. In Massachusetts, I was part of the Boston New Sanctuary Movement, where we partner with Centro Presente and the Chelsea Collaborative. The first focused on legislative action to end immigration raids, to separate local police work from federal immigration work, and for the enactment of the Trust Act. We worked city by city, town by town, educating chiefs of police, sheriffs, mayors, and other public officials. And we testified at the State House as well. The Chelsea Collaborative provided direct services to over 200 immigrant families in danger of being separated, their houses being raided, and people being incarcerated and placed among convicted criminals. The Collaborative provided emergency services to thousands of newly arrived children who had crossed the border by themselves. I met a young man whose family had been persecuted, threatened, and finally killed. He crossed the border by himself at 10 years old. I met a mother whose teenage sons had been arrested by the Border Patrol and sent to the Hielera, the icebox in the Texas Detention Center. I met two sisters whose father was a farmer and had been shot right in front of them. Today I'm thinking of them. I'm sending them prayers. I'm sending them our love and our compassion. Today I'm thinking of our community partners already overwhelmed with the fear of what is to come. Like us, they are afraid of the future, and like us, they are recommitting themselves to this new sanctuary movement. This is what it means to be in solidarity on a large scale. The beauty of our denomination is that although each congregation is autonomous, we are united in fighting racism, homophobia, xenophobia, and all manner of hatred. This is the message from Peter Morales, the president of the Unitarian Universalist Association. He says, "These are tough times. We are living in the midst of historic cultural turmoil. Long festering resentments are being unleashed, posing immediate threats to the most marginalized in our society and presenting long-term danger to our natural environment." He says, "We must prepare to provide sanctuary and to resist. First, we must provide sanctuary in the broadest and richest sense of the term. We begin with offering safe places for reflection and healing for our congregants and for those coming to seek spiritual community. But these times demand more. We must provide sanctuary to those most vulnerable, in particular migrants, primarily from Mexico and Central America, who may well face mass deportations. In addition, Muslims have been targeted. Second, we must prepare to resist human rights violations in active ways. We must make it much harder to deport, register, and discriminate. In the past, most of our work for justice and compassion has been positive. We have been advocates for marriage equality, racial justice, civil rights, immigration reform, and environmental justice. We will have to respond quickly to acts of the government. We will need to be agile and fast. As always, the key will be to work together. We have shown our ability to do this from resisting the human rights violations in Arizona and in joining the resistance at Standing Rock." Beloveds, our immigration system is broken. Government efforts to create effective solutions have largely been failures. Congress finds it easier to appropriate funds to build a border fence than it does to enforce the law against employers who exploit laborers or reform the immigration process so that families aren't separated for decades by it. Americans are grossly misinformed about the immigration issues. We talk about it as an issue of economics or national security, but we must consider the issue of dignity and the everyday lives of the people caught up in this nightmare. Now more than ever, migrant families are in danger. As people of faith, we are called to respond to this crisis. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security is increasing deportations with a particular focus on people, on children from Central America. Beloveds, let us recommit to make Star King once again a sanctuary for everyone. Let us continue to stand on the side of love. Let us be advocates for compassion and hospitality. There are so many ways we can help. We can support and protect people in our communities by offering sanctuary or supporting organizations that do. Whatever we choose to do, let us not surrender to fear. Let us not surrender to hate. Let us not surrender to racism. Many UU congregations are already deeply engaged with sanctuary. These congregations are stepping forward to end exclusion, violence, and exploitation. We regard reaching out to strangers as a holy act. a serious spiritual practice that fosters our own spiritual growth while at the same time standing as an example and witness against xenophobia around the world. Reverend Susan Frederick Gray led us in the 2012 Justice GA in Phoenix, Arizona. Her congregation is well known for their leadership in the area of immigrants' rights and immigration reform. Reverend Frederick Gray's congregation followed a three-pronged approach that she recommends to other congregations. The first prong is education, which she noted is the most overlooked and yet important aspect of this kind of action. The immigration issue is clouded with lots of misinformation and complexity, and you can't get a congregation effectively organized and mobilized until they're very clear themselves what's happening, why, and what's at stake. To do this, the issue needs to become part of the life of the congregation. Focus on personal stories and testimonies to connect this issue to church members. Reflect on the social justice issues that are affecting our local community. The second prong is partnership. We cannot do this work alone. The third prong is policy, the place where real long-term change happens. Frederick Gray said that the ability to change what happens at all levels of government, from local to federal, follows after you have the first two pieces in place. If you're organized locally, you will be able to act effectively at a national level when opportunities arise. For me, part of the educational component is also multicultural competence. President Morales refers to communities with a spiritual hunger that can be fed by our faith, by Unitarian Universalism. Like him, I believe that vibrant multicultural congregations are essential to a thriving Unitarian Universalism of the future. Congregants, ministers, religious educators, musicians, and lay leaders must be equipped with strong multicultural awareness, sensitivity, and humility. Our President Morales recommends that we develop a fluency in a second language, or a third one for some of us, as a path to multicultural awareness and sensitivity. He believes, and I agree, that this enhances our ability to engage effectively with diverse communities. At our General Assembly in 2011, a resolution was passed urging members of congregations and religious professionals to engage in continuing education programs in the Spanish language. How would you like to comply with this resolution? For free. Well, beloveds, you are in luck, because your minister, beginning this spring, will offer Spanish for Social Justice. Everyone is welcome. I truly believe that this will strengthen our immigration justice work and will deepen our sense of connection to immigrant communities. Let's begin our first lesson, shall we? Ningún ser humano es ilegal. No human being is illegal. Corazones sin fronteras. Hearts without borders. May all our corazones sin fronteras be blessed now and always. Ashe, blessed be, and amen.